Blog Talk Radio.
We're about to go live. Okay, well, it says we're on the air. Welcome to Fundamentally Mormon. This is Mark Lichtenwalter coming to you live on this 8th day of July 2019. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. We are live streaming on Facebook at facebook.com/LAZURUS1977 and at youtube.com/user/ God is my compass. Channel name is Fundamentally Mormon. Today we are going to continue on with our reading of The Gathering of Israel, which is chapter 14, which is pages 190 through 205 of The Gathering of Israel, which you can read for free online at ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. Once you get on that website, click on Read Ogden's Books and then scroll down to Gathering of Israel. We'll be starting on page 190. I also post these at my groups on Facebook at facebook.com. The group titles are, LDS Last Days, Prophecy and Gospel Discussions, as well as LDS Gospel Mysteries. And my page is Zion's Redemption Bookstore. And also I post these, the text to everything that I read, at fundamentallymormon.com. That's fundamentallymormon.com. So let's dedicate the program and we'll get right into this. This is the second to last chapter in this book, which we are reading today, and the title of this chapter is The Richer Blessings Upon Ephraim. And then tomorrow we'll do the conclusion, and then we'll probably start a book called Adam Michael, which goes over the Adam God doctrine. All of these books you can find for purchase in this book here. This is the Missionary edition of the Ensign to the Nations, which you can find at ogdenkraut.com, or you could message me for the information and I will send you contact information. They're $25 plus shipping and handling, unless you can go down to Santa Quinn, which is where the shop is. That's where the printing press is and that's where they print these books. We're also selling this book, and these are like 600 page books, but this is Ensign to the Nations Volume 1. And in this book, there are several really good books that Ogden Kraut compiled. He compiled over 70 different writings in his lifetime, all dealing with, he took quotes from all over the place, from church history and Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. And I don't agree with everything, but they're really good, and they're, you know, for edification. Of course, you have to test all things by the Spirit, which Paul wrote to Timothy in the New Testament. But in this book, we have a book which we've covered this book as it is. Actually, I've covered all of these books in my radio programs. As it is translated correctly, Blood Atonement, Calling and Election, Christ and the Crucifixion, the Church and the Gospel, the Church and the Priesthood, Compromise and Concessions, or Concession, Fasting for Health and Happiness, the Four Crafts, and then the book that we're reading today, The Gathering of Israel, also The Gift of Dreams and The Gift of Tongues. So, like I said, these books are really, I mean, if you get the hardbound edition, they're $100. That's what this book is right here. But these are out of print, so they're hard to get. But they're printing these ones now, and this is over 600 pages, 650 pages for $25. That's about the cost of creating the book. So we're not about making money on these books. We're about educating people who are interested in these topics for, Zion's redemption, the gospel, things that Joseph Smith taught, Brigham, Heber C. Kimball, all these things. So anyway, thank you for watching. Also, you can comment live on Facebook, as some of our brothers are doing here today. Charles says, Shalom, brother. Shalom, Charles, and Boker Tov, I think. Is that the one for, I can't remember. Boker Tov, is that good afternoon? I can't remember. Maybe you can help me. Anyway, somebody else says, hi, Mark. So, and I'll try to keep an eye on what people are saying on the Facebook Live and answer questions as they come along. In fact, let me just pull up. Oh, okay. My son decided to fix my phone. He drives me nuts sometimes. Okay, I guess I won't be doing that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Anyway, but I'll try to keep an eye on any questions or comments. Also, like I said, there is a guest call-in number. The guest call-in number is, Charles says, Boker Tov is good. Good morning. So I'm pretty sure that will apply to some people who watch this, but I can't remember what good afternoon or good evening is. Yeah. Anyway, you can also call in. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. And that is actually a New York City phone number. I don't know why they assigned that to me when I live in Utah, but whatever, I take what I can get. So let's dedicate the program, and we'll get right into the reading. I try to read a chapter a day starting at 6 p.m. Utah time, Mountain Daylight time. And, and then I got to go to work after this. So this is how I start my day. O God, the Eternal Father, we come before thee in the name of thy Son, Yeshua, our Messiah. We dedicate this time unto thee, Father, and we thank thee, Father, for the ability to broadcast live worldwide through the internet and stream through Facebook and YouTube. We thank thee, Father, for being able to cover this information and just to talk about these subjects, which apply to the Latter-day Gospel and your work on the earth at this time. We love thee, Father, and we thank thee so very much for all of our many blessings. We ask thee, Father, to help our minds be edified by thy Spirit, by thy Ruach HaKodesh, that we might be edified and be able to understand and to contemplate these things. As always, we ask thee, Father, to help us to test these things by the Spirit and help us to come to thine interpretation of the gospel, not ours. We love thee so very much. We pray for Zion to be redeemed, for thy kingdom to come on earth as it is in heaven. And we love thee, Father, and we say these things in the name of Yeshua, our Messiah, even Jesus the Christ. Amen. The Richer Blessing upon Ephraim, pages 190 through 205 of chapter 14 of The Gathering of Israel by Ogden Crowd. Behold, this is the blessing of the everlasting God upon the tribes of Israel, and the richer blessing upon the head of Ephraim and his fellows. Doctrine and Covenants, section 133, verse 34. The elect of God, or the elect of Jehovah, the blood of Ephraim, are to be gathered together in the last days to be spiritual leaders who will give the priesthood laws, or Torah, or instructions, and ordinances to all the tribes of Israel. Ephraim must gather together in the mountains as a shelter and for a preparation to redeem the center stake of Zion in Missouri. And it kind of talks a lot about that actually in the book of Isaiah, where in the last days He leads them in the desert places and in the highways of the top of the mountains, and he takes care of them. It'll be like a second Exodus when it comes to that point, as this nation falls around us and we gather together for safety and we are protected. And it's just, I mean, I can go into a bunch of this. Like on my old radio show, The Kingdom of God or Nothing, we actually went through the book of Isaiah and went through all of the chapters and really got into it and what the latter day end times meaning of a lot of those things were. But anyway, continuing on with the reading, as a preliminary step in the gathering, the saints are to be gathered to the top of the mountains in the fulfillment of the prophecies of Isaiah and Micah. And we talked about that on the last program. This is merely a temporary shelter until the forces of Ephraim have been able to procure the other lands and multiply in numbers sufficiently to provide hospitality to the rest of the tribes who shall come to Zion to receive their blessings at the hands of Ephraim and consummate the work for their ancestors in the temples of Jehovah raised up by Ephraim. End quote. Oh, Charles is telling me good afternoon is that Zarelin, I'm probably saying it wrong, Tovim, Zarelin, I can't say that. It's T-Z-A-R-A-I-I-M and Tovim, which is pronounced Zit-A-Re-Im, Tovim. Thanks, Charles. I was just talking for those of you who just jumped on. I was saying Boker Tov, but Boker Tov is good morning, and I should be saying good afternoon. Anyway, but that quote that we just quoted was a book taken out of the book of the House of Israel by page 502. By and by, the Jews will be gathered to the land of their fathers, and the 10 tribes who wandered into the north will be gathered home, and the blood of Ephraim, the second son of Joseph, who was sold into Egypt, which is to be found in every kingdom and nation under heaven, will be gathered from among the Gentiles or the Goyim, and the Gentiles who will receive and adhere to the principles of the gospel will be adopted and initiated into the family of the father of Abraham, and Yeshua or Jesus will reign over his own saints, and Satan will reign over his own. This will be the result. End quote. Brigham Young, Journal of Discourses, Volume 12, page 38. There are two central gathering places for Israel in the last days. One is in Palestine, where Judah is repossessing the land given to them by Yaakov or Jacob. The other gathering place is in America, with the central gathering place in Missouri. So a lot of Christians don't know about this, they mistranslate. They don't understand. But in Genesis chapter 49, when Jacob or Yaakov was giving his blessing to his son Yosef or Joseph, he said that his posterity would be removed from his brethren and that they would be taken over the wall and over the well, which means away from them, where they would not be able to get at him, to a place which he called the upmost bounds of the everlasting hills, which is a geological indicator on where we can find the land of Yosef, which is separated from his brethren. If you look at a map or a globe, the mountain chain that starts at South America does not end until it gets to the tip of North America. These are the everlasting hills, and the north utmost bounds of the everlasting hills would be the Rocky Mountains and North America. That is the tribal inheritance land of Yosef and his sons Ephraim and Manasseh. Anyway, continuing, you can find that in Bereshit, Genesis chapter 49. The prophecies foretelling the gathering of Israel refer to two peoples and two gathering places. Perhaps the largest body is that composed of the tribes of the northern kingdom known as Israel. this body will be gathered in two stages. The first stage is in the process of fulfillment at the present time. The gathering of Ephraim out of the world, the fishers of men had gone forth and have made their casts, bringing in great draughts of fish during the early history of the church. Now the hunters are searching for them in the hidden places of the world, bringing them one of a city and two of a family to the valleys of Zion. This is a preparatory to the. All this is preparatory to the arrival of the second and much larger body, the rest of the 10 tribes. Simultaneously, the gathering of Zion is to be gathered of the Jews to their homeland in Palestine or ancient Judea. The signal for the event was the sending of the word of the gospel to the remnant of the seed of Lehi, the Indians. This missionary work was begun in 1830 and has proceeded according to the plans of the Lord, Jehovah, our Elohim, to the present time and shall continue to those of Judah who will heed his call, have gathered to renew their covenants with him once more, end quote. House of Israel by Whitehead, page 500. Now, I know that there has been some anti-Mormon stuff going around about the DNA of the American Indians, and it is true that there are those tribes which are not of the House of Israel. However, there are tribes with DNA from the House of Israel. The Iroquois, from the tribe which my great-grandfather and grandmother came from, are Israelites. They have that DNA haplogroup X, I think it is, that comes from that region of the world. Other tribes, I think the Cherokee have it, but I can't remember. But there's other tribes as well that do have the DNA of the Middle East, the haplogroup type X DNA of the New World, of the Old World, of the Middle East within their DNA, which are over here. Now, Joseph Smith, I think he thought that everybody, all the Indians, were of the House of Israel, and we find your DNA that might not be true. However, before, when they first started coming out with this, it really bothered me because I watch and read everything anti-Mormon I can get my hands on because I want to know what's coming out so I can know what to say to people and defend the faith. And it really bothered me to the point where I was like, am I deluded? Because when I asked God if the Book of Mormon was true, the Holy Spirit burned within me like fire. It came down on me with such force and strength and like this overwhelming feeling of love and peace. And also, when I asked God to show me the truth and to heal me, and he sent the missionaries to me, and I asked God if Joseph was a true prophet and the Book of Mormon was true, I was completely healed. At the time, I had been using a lot of drugs, crack, cocaine, and cocaine, a lot of weed and drinking. I drank. I'd pass out every day after work. I was a functioning alcoholic, and I was so screwed up. Spent time homeless because of that addiction, and it really plagued my life, and I couldn't get over it. I had tried. I'd been in rehab centers and all this, and when I asked God to heal me and show me the truth, and then he sent me the missionaries, when I asked God if the Book of Mormon is true, the Holy Spirit came down on me with such great power and force and love and peace, and I was completely healed of all my drug addictions at that point, completely wiped out, gone, which is something I couldn't do on my own. So no matter what the anti-Mormon literature says, No matter what anybody says, I know for a fact, because of this and many other experiences that I've had with God in the Spirit and the witnesses that I've had, that Joseph Smith was a true prophet. The Book of Mormon is true. So when I asked God about the DNA, he said when he changed the Lamanite skin color, when the curse came upon them, he changed their DNA, and that made perfect sense to me. But we also know that there are DNA evidence of tribes of Israel in North America. Not only that, you've got the Bat Creek Stone in Tennessee, which had ancient Hebrew written on it, which said unto Judah. You've got the Ten Commandments carved on a cliff in ancient Paleo Hebrew down in New Mexico in Moon Creek, I think it is. And then we also know where Lehi's encampment was before he left Israel, before he left Jerusalem, before the Babylonian captivity. We know exactly where that is. It's been a couple of years, but the Israeli Defense Force was making roads to a certain area for perimeter, whatever. I don't know exactly what they were doing, but they stumbled upon an archaeological dig, and they found Bet Lehi, which means House of Lehi, and we know exactly.
Thanks.
We know exactly where Lehi's home was, so I'm gonna put my headset on. My wife took our daughter to the hospital, and.
Okay, there we go. That's probably better audio quality, at least for the radio show. But we know exactly where the house of Lehi was before they left Jerusalem. So, and if you want to find out more about that, there are YouTube videos. If you type in B-E-I-T, Bet Lehi, L-E-H-I, you can find those videos about that place. And anyway, but it doesn't matter. I know that the Book of Mormon is true, and it is a record of the house of Israel, which is spoken of in Ezekiel chapter 37, where it talks about two sticks or two records coming together, one from the tribe of Ephraim and his fellows, and one from the tribe of Judah and his fellows, and they will be one in mine hand. It talks about that in Ezekiel, and they are records, witnesses, records of the prophets of Ephraim. And the Book of Mormon is a record of the prophets of Ephraim who followed Jehovah in the New World. So, anyway, continuing on. Many prophecies portray the gathering of these two nations in the last days. The prophet Joseph Smith referred to them by saying, quote, "The city of Zion spoken of by David in the 102nd Psalm will be built upon the land of America." Quote, "And the ransomed of Jehovah shall return and come to Zion, with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads." Isaiah chapter 35, verse 10. "And then they will be delivered from the overflowing scourge that shall pass through the land. But Judah shall obtain a deliverance at Jerusalem." See Joel chapter 2, verse 32, Isaiah 26, verses 20 through 21, Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 12, Psalms 1:5, Ezekiel 34, 11 through 13. "These are testimonies that the good shepherd will put forth his own sheep and lead them out from all nations where they have been scattered in a cloud and dark day, to Zion and to Jerusalem, besides many more testimonies which might be brought." End quote. Teachings of the Prophet Joseph Smith, Teachings of the Prophet Joseph Smith, page 17. Orson Spencer related the beauty and the spirit that existed in Jerusalem centuries ago. It is the influence and motivation which should and will govern both of these central gathering places. The ancient Jews were taught of Jehovah our Elohim to build up Jerusalem as a place of gathering, and those whose circumstances forbid them to locate there, either from political or agricultural interests, were required to visit Jerusalem at least three times a year, where they could interchange hospitalities and friendships and contract matrimonial alliances, etc. Also, in addition to these facilities, are to these f- facilities of union, their baptisms or their mikvahs, were to be performed in the national font. Their marriage rites and the records of genealogy were to be performed and deposited in the archives of the great temple of Jehovah at Jerusalem. In this great city of gathering, their frequent and splendid national festivals were to be held from generation to generation. And see, God still requires those feasts and festivals today. That was all part of the restoration of the house of Israel in these last days, which was prophesied of by the prophets of old. And in section 124, if the temple in Nauvoo had been completed, Jesus or Yeshua said that that would be the beginning of revelations, and he would reveal the times and seasons or the Moedim of Israel at that point for restoration. Unfortunately, the temple never was finished. The fullness of the priesthood never was delivered, despite claims by the LDS Church otherwise. And the Father, which was required to come to restore that priesthood himself in that temple, never came to that temple. Jesus never came to that temple. No angel ever came to that temple. And the beginning of revelations for the redemption of Zion never happened. In fact, we've got the Doctrine and Covenants right here, this book here, if you're watching in the video. And pretty much January 18th, 1841, and a few revelations after that, and then there are no more revelations added to the canon for any instruction, which is unfortunate because they said if that temple was finished, that this would be the beginning of revelations. But Jesus said, Yeshua said, if you don't do what I say, you'll be rejected as a church with your dead, and you'll be cursed. Instead of blessings, you'll receive cursings. It's all in section 124, and that's actually what happened. They were cursed. They were rejected. They were kicked out of the cornerstone of Zion, Independence, and Nauvoo, and a great curse came upon them. Thousands died, and thousands, tens of thousands, suffered across the plains. And in this land where they were cast off to, as they were rejected out of the land because of their disobedience and sloth. I know that goes against the narrative of the current church, but if you read it all in section 124, it's all there. Anyway, and I've done videos on it, so I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to get into it. But anyway, continuing on with the reading, these multiplied means of union of the union of the Jews became strong in their attachments to their nations and kindreds, and national rites and usages became as enduring as their existence. If perchance they should be scattered amongst the remote nations of the earth, still the recollection of their journeys to Jerusalem and social groups, their splendid festivals at the national capital of their royal affinity with the great and good of Jehovah's people, vibrated through their minds with resuscitating power. I need to get a drink real quick. Sorry, when I talk a lot, my mouth gets dry and I stumble, so that's why I got the water. There it was that the Almighty condescended to reveal his acceptance of their sacrifices and bless the people from the greatest to the least, and even speak through the people through their high priest at least once a year. End quote, Millennial Star, Volume 9, page 311. The Apostle Orson Pratt was told in a revelation to lift up his voice and prophesy. One of his prophecies was concerning the gathering places of two Jerusalems, and he declared that, quote, and by the way, we're on page 194 for those of you following along in the Gathering of Israel at ogdenkraut.com. By and by, after you have fulfilled your mission to the nations of the Gentiles, and there will not any more of them repent, that is when you have fully accomplished all that is required of you in relation to them. You will have another mission, and so will the 12. and that is to the house of Israel that may be among those nations. I mean the literal descendants of Jacob, the Jews, and the descendants of the other tribes that may be scattered among the nations. There are some of the 10 tribes among them. But the body of the 10 tribes are in the north country. You will find a few among all of these Gentile nations. You will have to direct your attention to them after you fulfill your mission among the Gentiles and their times are fulfilled. You will have something to do among the Jews, and then will be a time of great power, such as you and I have not dreamed of. Indeed, we could not, with our narrow comprehension of mind, perceive the power that will then follow. The Lord has told of it in the revelation in the book of and doctrines of covenants. End quote. Journal of Discourses, Volume 7, page 187. So when God does come around to fulfilling the fullness of the priesthood to the Latter-day Saints, as he said he must in section 124, that is when he endows his people with his own power. It'll be the same power that Elijah had, the same power that Enoch and Moses and Noah had, the same power that Yeshua, Jesus had. That is the fullness of the priesthood. The priesthood that is passed from the Father to the sons of God on the earth, B'nai Elohim. That's the fullness of the priesthood. In order to receive that priesthood, you have to have the Melchizedek priesthood given to you by somebody who has it. Unfortunately, and I haven't talked about this for a while, but in 1921, Heber J. Grant, seventh president of the LDS Church, changed the ordaining of priesthood. So John the Baptist, when he first gave the Aaronic priesthood, and then Peter, James, and John came to restore the priesthood on the earth to a pure Ephraimite, Joseph Smith, they conferred the priesthood, and then they called them to offices. Unfortunately, Heber J. Grant, during the life of Joseph F. Smith and Charles Penrose, were trying to push for them to just ordain two offices and not confer the priesthood. Joseph F. Smith threatened to have Heber J. Grant and Charles Penrose excommunicated if they continued on with this. Unfortunately, Joseph F. Smith died. Heber J. Grant became the next president of the church, the seventh president of the church, and in 1921, he changed the conferral of the priesthood from conferring and then ordaining to an office to simply ordaining to an office with no priesthood, and that lasted through his presidency, through the presidency of George Albert Smith, and finally was changed by David O. McKay in 1957. So from 1921 to 1957, if they were following the counsel of the leadership of the church, they were simply ordaining to offices. And this had to deal with the Melchizedek and the Aaronic priesthood, but they were not conferring priesthood before they would ordain to offices. When David O. McKay changed it back, he wanted to go back and fix it all because a lot of these ordinances were done without priesthood and a lot of lines of authority had been screwed up. Unfortunately, the 12 has to have a unanimous decision on that, and they disagreed, and basically they said that it didn't matter if priesthood was really conferred, that they were ordained to office, and that's all that matters. So for many in the LDS Church, unfortunately, because of the corruption by Heber J. Grant, which lasted some 36 or 37 years, a lot of your priesthood lines of authority, the guy back in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s didn't get his priesthood conferred properly, which meant he had no priesthood, which means if that guy is in your line of authority, you don't have priesthood, which is really unfortunate. But that happened in the church. And I've gone into great detail on that in the past, but I don't know what to tell people. Anyway, I don't even know how I got onto that subject, but I think it needed somebody needed to hear it. So anyway, continuing on with the reading. Again, Orson Pratt described the establishment of the New Jerusalem by comparing it to the great deliverance of the Israelites under Moses. Quote, "In these last days, in redeeming his people from bondage, he has told us in plain words that his angel, his melech, or his messenger, should go before us and also his presence. And as in the deliverance of Israel in ancient times," excuse me, got to get my drink here. "In the deliverance of Israel in ancient times, the waters were divided and plagues were went forth upon the Mizraim, or the Egyptian nation. It would not surprise me at all if there should be similar power manifested in the redemption of Zion. There may be a few individuals go to prepare the way and to purchase a little more land and get things in order. But that when that is accomplished, this people as a body will return to that land and the Lord, Jehovah, going with them." End quote. Masterful Discourses of Orson Pratt, pages 345 and 346. The final destruction of the wicked and the redemption of Jerusalem and the New Jerusalem will occur at nearly the same time. Quote, "When the Gentiles shall have rejected the fullness of the gospel, the cup of their iniquity will be full." That's happening right now as we speak. But anyway, continuing. "Then will the Lord make bare his arm in the eyes of all nations in gathering together the dispersed of Israel from the four corners of the earth unto the great center of gathering for the elect of Jehovah, namely Zion on the western hemisphere and Jerusalem on the eastern. Then will he pour out his hot wrath and indignation upon those nations who have oppressed his chosen people and trodden them underfoot for so many generations." End quote. Millennial Star, Book 39, Volume 39, page 245. "The sons of Ephraim have a different character than the other sons of Jacob. They are courageous men of valor and accomplishment. The sons of Ephraim are wild and uncultivated, unruly and ungovernable. The spirit in them is turbulent and resolute. They are the Anglo-Saxon race. They are upon the face of the whole earth, bearing the spirit of rule spirit of rule and dictation to go forth from conquering to conquer. They search wide creation and scan under every nook and corner of this earth to find out what is upon and within it. I see a congregation of them before me today. No hardship will discourage these men. They will penetrate the deepest wilds and overcome almost insurmountable difficulties to develop the treasure of the earth, to further their indomitable spirit for adventure. We are not in this region by choice. There is no hardship that this people would not face and overcome. If there is a corner of the earth that can possibly be inhabited by mortals, the Latter-day Saints would venture there, and if they conceived it would be their duty and overcome every obstacle and soon make the desert waste blossom as a rose. Excuse me. Such an undertaking is as easy to them, comparatively speaking, as it is to go from one town to another. End quote, Brigham Young, Journal of Discourses, Volume 10, page 188. The blessings given to Joseph by Jacob was peculiar and much different from those given to his sons. Brigham Young interprets its meaning. Kim! Kim! I need help. Excuse me. I'm dying here. I don't know what's going on with my throat. Live radio, live everything for you. What's mom doing? Okay, that's fine. No, I don't need you. Thanks. Okay, sorry. That's the difference between a regular podcast and mine is I do the radio show with the guest call-in number, so anybody can call in and challenge me or add something to what I've said. And because of that, it's live, and I don't edit anything. It's just what it is. So, and then I live stream on Facebook and YouTube as well. And so when I get a frog in my throat, everybody gets to see it. So, all right, Brigham Young quoted, "When he comes to Joseph, he pronounces upon him a peculiar blessing." Now, he's quoting Genesis chapter 49, which is what I quoted earlier when I was just talking off the cuff. "Yosef is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall," etc. As much as to say that all the branches that descended from Joseph would not remain in one country connected to the parent tree, but they should be so fruitful and numerous in order to fulfill the prediction uttered in the 48th chapter as to become a multitude of nations. No, I guess I was wrong. It was not chapter 49. It's chapter 48. I thought it was 49, though. It doesn't matter. It's in that area. "As to become a multitude of nations in the midst of the earth, that they would have to leave the parent tree in place of their first inheritance, they would have to run over the wall, over the great walls of waters that intervened between them and this great western hemisphere." Here we get a clue to a land that was to be blessed above all other lands, a distant land from Canaan, as is expressed by the words, "the utmost bounds of the everlasting hills," Journal of Discourses, Volume 2, page 292. And that's what I talked about earlier. God gave us that geological indicator so we could know where that tribe would be, would go to, the home, the birth, not the birthplace, but the land of inheritance for the tribe of Yosef, specifically for Ephraim and Manasseh, would be in the upmost bounds of the everlasting hills, which is North America, according to the geological indicator that we can see on any map or globe of the world. Anyway, number one, H. Roberts gives the most unusual incident from the founding of the American nation. He portrays the destiny of American connection with the tribe of Joseph, a prophetic incident. In the April number of the Century is a well-written and profusely illustrated article on the inauguration of Washington. So when President Washington, our first president in this land, was inaugurated, this is what happened. And this was covered by Clarence Winthrop Bowen. Among the illustrations is a facsimile, I can't say that word, of the page of the Bible on which Joseph laid his hand while taking the oath of office. And it is to this that I wish specifically to call attention. The Centurion article says, quote, "Secretary Otis of the Senate held before him," Washington, "a red velvet cushion upon which rested the open Bible. You do solemnly swear," said Livingston, "that you will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of your ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States." Washington repeated the oath. Then he bowed his head and kissed the sacred book and with the deepest feelings uttered the words, "So help me God." The page of the Bible which Washington kissed and on which his hand rested while taking the oath is indicated in the Bible as the Bible of the St. John's Lodge by the leaf turned down, being turned down. A copper plate engraving is on the opposite page, illustrating the blessings of Zebulun and Issachar as pronounced upon them by the patriarch Yaakov in Genesis chapter 49. I was right. It is Genesis chapter 49. Anyway, 13th and 14th verses respectively. The page on which Washington's hand rested contains part of chapter 49 and also part of the 50th chapter down to verse 8 inclusive. The particular thing which struck me as being a remarkable circumstance is that the page indicated contains the blessings of Jacob upon his favorite son Joseph, which reads as follows. So this is the page which President Washington, George Washington, had his hand upon in the Bible. It's exactly where he put his hand, which is Washington was an Ephraimite as well. But anyway, continuing. This is where George Washington had his hand. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd and stone of Israel. This is giving a blessing upon Joseph, from which is the shepherd and stone of Israel, right? So everybody thinks that's Jesus. It's not. It's Messiah ben Joseph. There is a stone and shepherd of Israel through Judah, and there's a stone of shepherd of Israel through Judah and through Joseph. Messiah ben Yosef, Messiah ben Judah, and anyway, it doesn't matter. Every time I see that, I just think, oh, people don't know that. So anyway, even by the God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty, who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, and blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breast and of the womb. The blessing of thy fathers, of thy father, have prevailed above the blessing of my progenitors, unto the utmost bounds of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brother. Today, the Latter-day Saints, to the day, Latter-day Saints, blessing, excuse me, to the day, to the Latter-day Saints, the blessing of Joseph has particular significance, for they reason that they, more than any other people, are familiar with his descendants, and the blessings promised them in which also they hope to participate. The Book of Mormon is a history chiefly of the descendants of Yosef and in the mighty nations which have peopled the American continent. The Latter-day Saints see in part the fulfillment of great blessings pronounced upon his head. The article reviews the Book of Mormon passages that refer to the seed of Yaakov through Joseph coming to the promised land, including the comment made by the Savior when he visited them after his resurrection. Let me just say, when Jesus in his mortal ministry said, "Other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd," he was speaking of the tribe. He was about to be crucified. He never went to anybody but the lost sheep of the house of Israel. His mission while in mortality was to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, mainly Judah, Levi, and Benjamin. When he said, other sheep of the which are not of this fold, them also must I go to and bring, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. He didn't fulfill that in his mortal ministry, but he did fulfill that among the Ephraimites and the Manasseites of the house of Joseph in the land of their inheritance, which is the utmost bounds of the everlasting hills. And the Book of Mormon records the event that happened in 3 Nephi, chapter 21 and 22 in that area, where Jesus, Yeshua, did come to those people. And he did fulfill that promise. That wasn't empty words that he spoke. And you can go look at that if you want. If you don't have a Book of Mormon, go to LDS.org. And I'm pretty sure that you can find the Book of Mormon there, and then go to 3 Nephi, and then go to chapters. Start with chapter 20 and read through 23. That's really good stuff there. Anyway, additional passages are reviewed that discuss the additional blessings pronounced upon Joseph by Moses. The author then says, but what seems singular in connection with these promises made to Joseph and the account of their partial fulfillment in a portion of his posterity inhabiting America is that after the nations composed largely of his descendants had been destroyed, other peoples from Europe, among whom, however, were also large number of descendants of Joseph through the loins of Ephraim, had taken possession of the land, and the real establishment of that government, which is destined to shape the destiny of the great continent of America, the land of Joseph, the very first executive chosen for that nation, when being sworn to preserve and protect and defend the constitution of this land, which God had inspired men to frame, he placed his hand upon the very passage of the Bible containing the blessings pronounced upon the head of Joseph by the patriarch Jacob. Will men call this a mere coincidence? Strange coincidence indeed it is, if that be all it is. Observe that the 49th chapter of Bereshit or Genesis is nearly the very first leaves of the Bible. And in laying the book open upon a velvet cushion for the use of one to be sworn in, it would be naturally parted near the middle of the volume, not parted at the first few leaves. Let others believe all this to be coincidence if they choose. But for my own part, there is much that is too significant to assign it to the class of a phenomenon so conveniently disposed of by calling them coincidences. End quote. Contributor, volume 10, verse 275. So when you open a book, and I'm doing it on the video, so if you're listening to the radio, then you're not going to see it, but it usually opens up to the middle of the book. If you open a book to the first part or the last part of a book, it's going to close, right? And that's what they're saying. Like, there was, unless they hold it open, which is the case, but like, it's significant that George Washington did what he did. Now, I wanted to say one thing. When the northern tribes were taken by Assyria and taken captive, after the Assyrian Empire fell, they formed a group and they went up and they disappeared into the area around the Black Sea. Out of the same area at the same time came a tribe called the Sons of Isaac, Isaac's sons. Later they became the Saxons. Isaac's sons are Ephraim and the northern tribes of Israel, and they settled in the north country in the many nations of Europe and Russia. They went many other places. We know that there was a tribe of Manasseh in Southeast Asia. They still have their records. They came back to Jerusalem and to Israel. It's been a couple years, but But the Saxon people, the European people, especially the tribe of Ephraim, settled in the British Isles. There is a lot of the pure Ephraimites. And after the time of Jesus, Joseph of Arimathea, the great uncle of Jesus, took Miriam, Jesus' wife, and children, and Elizabeth, and her children, and a lot of these people up beyond Hadrian's Wall, which was in, so Hadrian's Wall is the boundary of Scotland and the Roman Empire. They took them out of the Roman Empire because they didn't want the family of Jesus to be murdered. And a lot of the descendants of Jesus went up to where Ephraim was. A lot of the apostles taught to those people there because they are Israel. A lot of them are the house of Israel. Isaac's sons, the Saxons, went up into that place. George Washington is an Ephraimite. Joseph Smith was an Ephraimite. I'm an Ephraimite. I'm a German, a Jew by lineage, also from England and Scotland. I'm an Ephraimite. Our tribe, after the Assyrian captivity, settled in the utmost bounds of Europe through France and Denmark and the Netherlands, Gotland, all of that, Germany. And then they went out through the whole world and blessed the whole world. Anyway, continuing on. Brigham Young continues to elaborate on the special blessings given to Joseph and his posterity by saying, quote, "Remember that they were to be blessed not only in the precious things of the earth and the fullness thereof, but with the precious things of heaven. What are the precious things of heaven? Are they anything else but revelations, or perhaps the priesthood?" That's me putting that in there, but continuing. "Can you think of anything else that would be called precious, would be called the precious things of heaven? After the children of Joseph came to this land, they were blessed, as Moses predicted, with the precious things of heaven. Jehovah opened to them things past, present, and future, unfolding his great purposes that were to take place in the latter times. He unfolded them to the mysteries and things too great to be uttered by man." Journal of Discourses, Volume 2, page 292 and 293. Thus, Joseph and the tribe of Joseph would possess the richer blessings and the precious things of heaven. These special blessings are available to the other tribes of Israel through the seed of Joseph in the last days. Joseph received two important dreams that pertained to him and his descendants. He related his first dream to his brothers. Quote, "And he said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field. And lo, my sheath arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaths stood around about and made obedience to my sheath." So a sheath is where they're gathering the wheat into bundles and they tie the sheaths together. That's what he's talking about. So the blessing, well, anyway, I'll just continue. "And his brethren said to him, Shall thou indeed reign over..." See, they knew exactly what he was saying. "Shall thou reign over us? Or shall thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. Genesis chapter 37, verses 6 through 8. This dream was fulfilled when Joseph was made a ruler in Mizraim, or Egypt, and his brothers came to him to be saved from the famine. See Genesis chapter 42, verse 6. Also Genesis chapter 43, verse 26. The second dream was a dream in the of the sun and the moon and the 11 stars which bowed to Joseph. This dream represented something more distant and further in time and space. This was perhaps relating to a time when the 11 tribes would pay obeisance to the tribe of Joseph in the latter days. Excuse me, we're on page 202 if you're following along. Excuse me. So we have three pages left. And then anybody who wants to call in, I'm just going to put the guest call-in number. If we don't have anybody by the end of the reading, then I'll just send the program, and that's fine. Nobody has to call in. But the guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. You can also ask me questions on Facebook. And we've got three pages left, and then I'm going to work unless we get a caller. So that's fine. All right. The interpretation of this dream pertains to the posterity of Joseph and the posterity of his 11 brothers, including his parents. It was a dream of the future when the tribe of Joseph would be sent before the other tribes of Jacob to prepare the way for their temporal and spiritual salvation in the last days. And see, Messiah ben Joseph also does that. And that is his job, to prepare the way as one greater than John the Baptist for the coming of the King Messiah, Messiah ben Judah, ben David ben Judah, or the King Messiah, who is Yeshua, who the Gentiles call Jesus. The tribe of Joseph actually did prepare the way for the Jews to come back to the promised land of Judea, or what they call Israel, because England and the lost tribes of the house of Israel, no matter if they knew who they were or not, they were the ones that were in control of Israel before Israel was made into a nation. They're the ones that facilitated doing the things in the United Nations or the whatever they call it back then, so that Israel could be made into a nation. And the other thing too, which people don't realize this, every single tribe of Jacob was represented at the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Those Romans were mingled with the blood of Israel. And I believe they were Ephraimites. So when people say the Jews killed him, wicked people from every tribe were represented at that crucifixion, including Joseph, including Judah. Continuing on, the tribe of Joseph would receive the precious things of heaven and be established in a choice land where they would be able to say to the other tribes of Israel when they come, God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and save your lives by a great deliverance. And who was it that went in and freed the Jews from the Germans? Mainly England and English people from America. Of course, everybody helped, I guess, whatever, but there is real significance in what happened with the tribe of Joseph going in to save those Jews in Germany from that nut job, Adolf Hitler. Anyway, continuing on, the tribe of Joseph, like Joseph, shall be blessed with revelations and temporal wealth, and this is continuing on with Brigham Young, blessed with revelations and temporal wealth, preserving the other tribes of Israel, and when famine and desolation come to the earth. See the Doctrine and Covenants, section 133, verses 30 through 34. Who are the people of the 10 tribes of Israel? Simply the people of the many different denominations throughout the world whose righteousness and faith in Jesus Christ is sufficient for them to be saved when the destructions of God sweep over the earth. Ephraim's mission is to prepare the way for them to come for a temporal and spiritual salvation. Joseph's dreams signified that his 11 brothers would pay obeisance to him, and also that the 11 tribes would pay obeisance to Joseph's tribe. The mission of the tribe of Joseph today is identical to the mission of their forefather Joseph while he was in Egypt. Notice the similarity of circumstances and the missions in the following discourses. Famine shall sorely oppress them. Confusion and war shall make their hearts to faint and their knees to tremble. Would to God that our nation had never given cause for the distress which they now only begin to suffer. Would to God that they chiefly, for their sakes, had never provoked the anger of the Almighty in killing our prophets and casting out our people. They burned our hay and our houses. They burned our hay and our houses and left sick our women and children in the scorching sun and beating rain without food or shelter. We told them when they did it that they would have wheat, that we would have wheat when they had none. When these poor starving thousands flock here for food, will it not be glory enough for you to begin with, to feed them, to give them shelter and administer to their sick? Will not such coals of fire heap upon their heads to be hot enough to satisfy your righteous indignation? If you will do as you are told, your eyes shall be witnesses to just such scenes. You may ask, when shall these things be? Answer, just so soon as you can possibly lay up the wheat. Orson Hyde, Journal of Discourses, Volume 2, page 206. Continuing on with another quote. And now I am prepared to say by the authority of Jesus Christ that not many years shall pass away before the United States shall present such a scene of bloodshed as has not a parallel in the history of our nation. Pestilence, hail, famine, and earthquake will sweep the wicked of this generation from off the face of the land to open and prepare the way for the return of the lost tribes of Israel from the north country. Teachings of the Prophet Joseph Smith, page 17. And we talked a little bit about that in the vision that I was shown about why the Bellingham Seattle Temple has a Moroni that's facing west instead of east, and the vision that I had of Mount Rainier blowing up like Mount St. Helens and the 10 lost tribes coming down through that land. So that hasn't happened yet, but if the king of Egypt had not observed the counsels of Joseph, almost the whole people would have been destroyed. As it was, those who did not obey Joseph's counsel were under the necessity of selling all their property and ultimately themselves for slaves to the king in order to obtain the bread which they have laid up during the 7 years of plenty. And if they had obeyed Joseph's counsel, now, hold on. I read that wrong, but I'm continuing. Now, brethren, let us not treat this subject lightly. And quote George Albert Smith, Journal of Discourses, Volume 12, page 142. Let us go to work, every man and woman of us, and lay up our stores and build good storehouses and increase. And if we will do this, brethren, we will have some of the finest seasons you ever saw. Our grain will increase, and we will lay a foundation for the world and the ungodly, and we will buy them for our servants. They will be glad to come and work for us, and work for us for bread. And each one of us will be like Joseph in Egypt was to his father's house. They will come to us and buy grain and the good things of the world. I know that we are the people who have got to do that thing. Heber C. Kimball, Journal of Discourses, Volume 4, page 338. Oh, excuse me. I want to see if I can. Okay. This is part of our religion, to lay up stores and provide for ourselves and for the surrounding country, for the day is near when they will come by the thousands and by the millions with their fineries to get a little bread. Heber C. Kimball, Journal of Discourses, Volume 5, page 163. There is more salvation and security in wheat than in all the political schemes of the world, and also more power in it than all the contending armies of the nations. Raise wheat and lay it up in store till it will bring a good price, not dollars and cents, but kingdom, countries, peoples, tribes, and tongues. For how they have sold themselves for naught and must be redeemed without money. It will take wheat to redeem them. Raise wheat and lay it up securely, and it will preach the gathering more eloquently, successfully, and extensively than all the missionaries that we can send out to sweep through the nations with the proclamation of the judgments of God abroad in the land. And quote Orson High, Journal of Discourses, Volume 2, page 207. Those who are descendants of Joseph, as the blood of Ephraim, understand God's work in ministry is Ephraim, who will prepare themselves to be saviors on Mount Zion for the rest of the house of Israel. And the mission of Ephraim, or the elect, is to gather to the top of the mountains and to become prepared in all things when God's judgments will be poured out upon the nations of the earth. The tribe of Joseph must make a temporal foundation as Joseph did in Egypt, so that when the other tribes of Israel gather, they will be able to receive food as well as other ordinances of the gospel. Thus, the saints not only possess the keys and responsibilities for the gathering of the house of Israel, but they are to assist them in both temporal and spiritual blessings. The keys and responsibilities of gathering rest with the elders of Israel, but today that mission is being challenged and opposed. Many of the leading elders are promoting the scattering of Israel instead of the gathering of Israel. Those who should be the means of gathering Israel are discouraging it. Thus, only those who possess enough of the Spirit of the Lord, those who are spiritually strong enough, will gather to Zion and help others to gather, thus fulfilling this monumental mission of the tribe of Joseph. And that's the end of that chapter. When we come back on tomorrow, we'll be continuing with chapter 15, which is the conclusion of that book. So I do one chapter a day, and I think we are going to be reading, the Michael Adam book. So we'll go over the Adam and God doctrine, which the church completely flips out about these days, but it's still taught in the temple. When the Elohim, the council of the gods, or the council of the mighty ones, send Jehovah and Michael to create the earth, you'll notice in the endowment, and I'm not giving away signs and tokens, so just simmer down a little bit and stop worrying so much. But when Jehovah and Michael get to where the earth is created, what does Jehovah say? He says, go and do it. And it is Michael that creates the earth. And Joseph Smith taught that there are three in the grand council for this earth, who are the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, the Father being the Creator, God the Creator, then God the Redeemer, that's Jesus Christ, and God the Witness, and that they would come each in their own dispensation. So when Michael became, according to the endowment, became Adam upon the earth in the Ancient of Days, which is spoken of in Daniel chapter 12 and Daniel chapter 7, Michael is the creator of the earth under the direction of Jehovah. So you could say that Jehovah, or that Michael was the Melech or messenger of Jehovah, under the direction of the Elohim, which is under the council of the gods, which is under the council of God, the Eternal Father, who is Adam. Amen. So we can get into that doctrine. I think we'll get into that Wednesday probably. We'll see. I'll try to come on every day and do this. But I wanted to, when they talk about the gathering of the saints the gathering of the saints to the top of the mountains, and everybody in 2002 they had the Olympics in Salt Lake, and President Hinckley and all these other people were like, well, that's a fulfillment of the prophecy of the gathering of in the last days to the top of the mountains. Anyway, I wanted to read this from 95 Thesis, and I've read this book before. You can find it in the history of the show. But I'm going to be on topic 91 and topic 92A. And this is quotes from the early history of the church about the people that would come out of this people, talking about the Latter-day Saints in the valleys of the Salt Lake. Anyway, we'll just get into it. His word will go forth in these last days in purity. For if Zion will not purify herself, if the church will not do as I have commanded, and that's the same thing that is talked about in section 124. If you don't do what I say, you will be rejected as a church. Anyway, his word will go forth in these last days in purity, for if Zion will not purify herself so as to be approved of in all things in his sight, he will seek another people. Teachings of the Prophet Joseph Smith, page 18. Many, according to Heber C. Kimball, many of this people have broken their covenants, but you cannot do that, for God will cut you off and raise up another people that will carry out his purposes in righteousness unless you walk up to the line in your duty. End quote. Heber C. Kimball, Journal of Discourses, Volume 4, page 108. See, they knew that they would be rejected if they didn't do what God had asked them to. The next quote is by John Taylor. What would be necessary to bring about the result nearest the hearts of the opponents of Mormonism? Simply to renounce, abrogate, or apostatize from the new and everlasting covenant of marriage in its fullness. Were the church to do that as an entirety, God would reject the saints as a body, which they have done. They have rejected, so he is rejected. The authority of the priesthood would be withdrawn from its gifts and powers, and there would be no more heavenly recognition of the administrations. So when the current guys say that the prophets can never lead you astray and they're infallible and all of that, well, if John Taylor was the president of the church and he said that this would happen, apply the trope that the president of the church can't lead you astray in false doctrine. Well, to Brigham Young and what he taught about the Adam God doctrine and many other things, for one, but also to this John Taylor quote. If you get rid of these things, God will get rid of you. You will be rejected as a people. Of course, by this time, I believe they were already rejected because the heavens were basically closed up for most everything except for when the revelations in the 1880s and 90s, but that was where I don't want to get into that. Continuing on with the quote, the heavens would permanently withdraw themselves, and the Lord would raise up another people of greater value and stability, for his work must, according to the unaltered decrees, go forth. For the time of the second coming is near, even at the doors. John Taylor, Deseret News, April 23rd, 1885. But the time will come when the Lord will choose a people out of this people upon whom he will bestow his choicest blessings. Heber C. Kimball, he's talking to the Latter-day Saints. That God is going to choose another people because the Latter-day Saints in their sloth and disobedience do not live up to what God has asked them to do. Deseret News, November 9th, 1865. See also Journal of Discourses, Volume 11, page 145. And that these kind of things are why the church doesn't want the saints, the Latter-day Saints, to actually study the Journal of Discourses. It's why they try to get rid of the Journal of Discourses, and it's why they raise the price up on the Journal of Discourses so that they're too expensive for most people to buy. I have a copy, and I can get you copies, I think. Kevin Kraut, I actually bought Kevin's old set. When Ogden died, he sold me his set. So I've got Kevin's old set, and Kevin has Ogden's old set. But you can buy the Journal of Discourses through Pioneer Publishing at ogdenkraut.com, I think, if they have them in print. They only have one printing press. They can only do one book at a time, I think. So right now they're doing Volume 1 of Enzyme to the Nations. So God will preserve a portion of this people, of the meek and humble, to bear up the kingdom to the inhabitants of the earth, and will defend his priesthood. For it is the last time and the last gathering time. Brigham Young, Journal of Discourses, Volume 10, page 362. I know there is a people in the heart's core of this people that will arise in their majesty in the day that is near at hand and push spiritual things to the front, a people who will stand up for God. Orson F. Whitney, Deseret News, August 11th, year 1889. So these were all leaders of the church back in the day. They all knew that this was going to happen. Daniel H. Wells stated, a people will come forth from among us who will be zealous of good works, willing to do the bidding of the Lord, who will be taught in his ways and who will walk in his paths. End quote. Daniel H. Wells, Deseret News, November 6, 1875. He also said, there will come up from the midst of this people, that people that has been so much talked about, Deseret News, December 9th, 1882. George Q. Cannon stated, such a body will evolve from those called Latter-day Saints who as a church possess the fullness and power of the pure plan of salvation. Millennial Star, Volume 42, page 585. Orson Pratt said, I do not know, but it would be an utter impossibility to commence in carrying out some of the principles pertaining to Zion right in the midst of this people. They have strayed so far that to get a people who would conform to heavenly laws, it may be needful to lead some from the midst of this people and commence anew somewhere in the region round about these mountains. Journal of Discourses, Volume 15, page 361. But in the church today, you are taught the false doctrine that God will not raise up another prophet or another people to do the work which we have been appointed to do. And that was Church News, March 30th, 1874, page 16. So you can go take a look at that. That's 95 Theses by Ogden Kraut, and that's topics 91. And then I also suggest reading 92A, which talks about the setting in order, and also 92B, which talks about the one mighty and strong. So anyway, the guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. And my wife is on the line. Just kidding. She's right here next to me. What do you want? I finished everything, so we don't have anybody on the line, so I think I'm just going to go to work. So. Okay. Anyway, so we don't have anybody calling in, it looks like, which is fine. We do one chapter a day, and I'll try to come in at 6 every day and do a chapter and then go to work. So that's what I'm going to do now. So thank you, everyone, for listening to this program. Take care, everyone. God bless, and we'll be back on tomorrow. And I'll post this, the text to this at fundamentallymormon.com. So anyway, we're out. Take care. Bye.